Welcome to the Stuck in a Rut podcast.
Got him, dropped him. Nice shot, buddy.
Adam and I sit down on this episode with Coke Wallace. He's a master guide. He's been guiding and hunting in Alaska for over 30 years. He's one of those old timers type guys that just doesn't even know what a podcast is or social media is, or doesn't watch TV, doesn't watch the news. He just lives and breathes Alaska and hunting and trapping. And he's seen the decline in populations and sheep. His name has been blasted over the years by different news articles and organizations and anti-hunting groups and government agencies for trapping wolves in certain areas. If you Google his name, a bunch of stuff will come up, and it's pretty fun to talk with this guy, just real raw, unfiltered. He says it exactly how it is, what needs to happen in order to bring the sheep populations back up, and how we need to manage our predators in order to restore these animal populations. He is also doing a sheep hunt this year that you can win. So his business is Midnight Sun Safaris. If you go to elitehuntclub.com, this is where they're doing a raffle. So if you've been to any shows or expos, you know that you can put in for raffles to win sheep hunts, but the odds are pretty slim, and this increases your odds. So they only give 2,500 tickets out for this doll sheep hunt in Alaska that anybody can win, to be guided by Coke and his crew. And it's a $38,000 value, and every ticket for the raffle is $25. So you can put in as many as you want. It can increase your odds. So we talk a little bit about that toward the end of this podcast episode. So pay attention to that. And this is can really, really increase your chance of being able to win a doll sheep hunt. One entry is $25. If you put in 10 entries, you save a little bit, and it's $200 for 10 entries. The best value is to do 30 entries for $500. And you can also use our code STUCKINTHERUT15. So stuck letter N, the rut 15. And again, the more tickets you buy, the better draw odds you have, because they are only giving out 2,500 tickets. Without further ado, here's Coke. Well, thanks for coming on. I know you're a hard guy to track down. You're a busy man.
Is it going to work this time?
I hear somebody.
There we go.
Okay.
It's working for me. Are you there, Coke?
Yep, I can hear you now.
Cool. Yep. Okay, 10th time is the charm. So thanks for coming on with us. Coke, I don't know if you know who we are. Do you? Or are we just strangers?
You guys are originally from Idaho and you live in Dillingham, is that right? Or Utah and you live in Dillingham?
Originally from Idaho, we live in Keenstown.
Or my way off.
Close.
Close enough, Coke.
Out in southwest.
King Salmon? You live in King Salmon?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, cool. I don't do social media, and I don't watch television, any of that kind of stuff. So that's why I don't even watch my own hunting shows that I've been in. So,
oh man,
that's just so you know how socially networked inept I am.
Hey,
by choice.
Yeah.
I do t-shirts instead. You can't censor me.
Oh man, I love this guy already.
He's got some classics.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just Googling your name because I had to, you know, see what Google had. And, of course, there's a bunch of sites trying to, you know, cancel you and shut you down for all the trapping that you do.
Oh, yeah. We've had some interesting conversation with some pretty stupid people over the years, that's for sure.
You know you've made it in life when you can get a whole website called AlaskaBearsAndWolves.com made about you.
Whole website, huh? Wow, that's
right.
That's like my life goal. Piss off the Democrats.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely want to get
into
that.
And you know, the best part about it is I thought Donald Trump was real kind when he called them fake news, because they've been spouting yellow bullshit lies about me and my family for over a quarter of a century. It's laughable. The only The only good thing about it is they sell t-shirts and they sell hunts, so I don't care what they're saying about me as long as they spell my name right, and they can always call me for spell check if they need help.
Yeah.
Any exposure is exposure, even if it's bad exposure, so.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard, girl, this is Adam Koch, nice to meet you, I guess, virtually over the phone here, but I'm buddies with Tyler Friel. I heard you on his podcast, and you know, you come as one of the top guides in the state. I used to be involved with RAC and sit on the board, so I was pretty close with Mark Richards, and I think you know him, don't you? The executive director for RAC.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, I know Mark. I've known him a long time. Yep.
Yeah, Mark spoke really highly of you, and I think he told me a story about. I think it was Park Service doing a survey or something in the park or in the preserve or something, and they were circling collared wolves or whatever, and you ran over on a snow machine and shot the wolves, and they tried to get you or something for that, the Park Service.
Yep.
And yeah, I used to work for the Park Service. That's how we got to King Salmon. I flew for all the fishing lodges down here for air taxi and, you know, lodge work and stuff, flying beavers for them, and then I got the job full-time with the Park Service, and I could only do 5 years. So you can imagine working for those hippies. It was pretty difficult being a hunter and a trapper. But yeah, when Mark told me that story, I'm like, that's a guy I'd like to meet, because that's a hell of a story.
Well, you know, the park has been, you guys know the park was brought to you by sheep hunters for sheep, and they haven't had a dedicated sheep out just in over 40 years. You know, they've perverted and bastardized the park that was given to them by hunters, and they've lost sight of what it was supposed to be. And now, in the dilemma we're in this state with what's going on with our sheep population in particular, we should be doing everything we can to help them. And, you know, I've been saying for the last several years, in the good old days when there was only two genders and park rangers poisoned wolves and shot eagles, it was a hell of a lot better world than the one we're living in today. And you know, you mentioned Mark Richards. I like Mark. We don't see eye to eye on everything, but I think a problem that all of us have, I don't care if you're a resident hunter of Alaska or a hunting guide or a non-resident hunter or what have you, is allocation. In my mind's eye, is a four-letter word, because when you start talking about allocation, you're talking about my piece of the pie versus anyone else's piece of the pie. And the bottom line is, our wildlife biologists have the ability to grow as many animals as we want to if we choose to do it. And, you know, they had a meeting about the sheep problem in this state at the Wild Sheep Foundation banquet last week that I attended in Reno, Nevada. And we're not going to fix anything real fast if we don't do drastic measures. Drastic times call for drastic measures. And in the old days, when the government trusted the private individual, people like us went out and we took care of the problem. But nowadays, with all these three-letter government agencies off the rail running around harassing people, I don't see us fixing our game management problem real fast until we bring all these corrupt and inept three-letter agencies to heel. And, you know, that being said, we have as good a chance of getting a sheep with me and my guys as anyone, but man, you guys and girls, the sheep are really hurting in my area. They're really, really hurting. And I know there are some pockets in the states where they're not so bad, but it's going to be a hunt. That's for sure. You know, I don't see the sheep coming back real fast anytime soon without drastic help. And even then, it's going to be a 6 year or more process, I believe.
I mean, you've been around enough, Koch, to see cycles come and go. Is it eagles? Is it weather, wolves, a combination, over harvest? What do you think from your opinion?
Well, the weather for sure has smashed them down. The last 3 years, every winter has been worse than the last. And last winter, we had that terrible phenomenon in late December. We had right here in Healy, we had 4 feet of snow, followed immediately by 6 inches of rain. And I mean, it rained like Yakutat, Alaska for 36 hours. It sounded like you were us with birdshot. And, yep. And then it changed from rain back to blizzardy snow, added 4 more feet of snow, and then it went to 35 below. And that, you know, that's a death sentence for sure, because you got the snow and then the water and then more snow on top, and then it froze hard as a damn rock. And, you know, one thing in my area I can do for the moose, when we get bad snow years, I spend a lot of time, I trap in my area too, which helps, but I spend a lot of time driving from Willow Patch to Willow, the moose have an easy path to go.
Yep.
And I believe too that, cause I've seen as many as last year, I found a group of 44 moose were living in them snowmobile tunnels that I made for them, because the snow was astronomically deep in the central range here last year. We had over 12 feet of snow. And I had 44 moose living in the little habit trail I had made them. You wouldn't even believe that those two little willow patches could hold 44 moose. But I think if you make it easy on them like that, you know, for a wolf to kill a moose, he's got to get down in that deep trench with him. And man, if you're a 120-pound canine trying to take down a 14 or 1600-pound animal that's sporting a set of serrated knives on all four corners, that's a tough job. So I think that helps them a lot. I can't do that kind of stuff for the sheep. You know, I mean, their range is too off limits for me to be able to help them, you know, with snowmobiles or whatever. I don't even think I could, like, I can help the moose in that regard. And so that being said, the only thing we can do is beat the shit out of the predators. And it used to be acceptable, and yep, it should be again. And I mean, it's up to we, the people. They already stole our country with their bullshit Dominion voting machine. We should be using Dominion to grow animals, like it talks about in the owner's manual for the human animal, and get rid of that other Dominion. We can grow as many animals as we want if we want to do it, you know. And I've been arguing with the Earth Muffins and the Tundra Wookiees around here for years about it. They always say, "Oh, you want to farm animals? You want to farm animals?" Well, I don't look at it as farming. If you want to call it farming, you can. I call it Dominion, and we can do it. I mean, the white-tailed deer and the wild turkey is all you got to say. I rest my case.
Yep.
We can grow enough animals for everyone to shoot an animal. I don't give a shit if you're from Finland or Phoenix or Fairbanks. If you want to go shoot a caribou or a sheep, we have the ability to provide that opportunity if we want to. But we got to not play politics with our game management, you know, and that was one thing they addressed at the Wild Sheep Foundation down there when they were talking about our sheep problem. You know, well, we don't want to talk politics. Well, the truth of the matter is it is about politics, mm-hmm, whether you like it or not. And your politics are either to the right or they're to the wrong. There's no other way to look at it. The left doesn't bring anything to the table but tumult and discourse. They don't pay any bills. And they don't bring any solutions to the table. They want their way, their way, their way, their way, and only their way. And if they can't get their way, they are threatening, argumentative, combative, adversarial assholes. And that's a fact. I've been dealing with them for 30 years on this Denali wolf stuff. And even when they got their wolf buffer zone for a few years under Tony Knowles, they weren't happy. So as they got it, it wasn't enough. They wanted more, you know, and they said, "Oh, they'll just give us this and this will be it. This is all we want." Well, you know, and everyone talks about it's a give and a take. It's a give and a take. Well, if it's a give and a take, the other side has to give something to give. If all they do is take and all we do is give, it's not a give and take relationship. It's an I give and you take from this relationship. That doesn't work for shit for me. And, you know, like I said, you got this beautiful national park here brought to you by sheep hunters, and no one is offended that they haven't had a sheep biologist in 40 years. They've lost sight of what the park was supposed to be about.
Yeah.
And it's pretty disheartening, and it's disillusioning to me because I've been here for 31 years. And when I first moved out here with my wife, we were the last people on the road. There was no one around. You turn off the light and it was dark. And I've been moved in on top of by lots of people who don't care for my lifestyle. I don't give a shit what they care about, but there's more and more of them, and they're a noisy minority, I guess I should say, because people like us are all busy working and making a living. Most of us don't have time to stop and fight all these stupid battles that we need to fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something I want my son to have, the opportunities that I had. I don't see him having those opportunities right now. This sheep thing it's terrible. I mean, we did good last year as a outfit, but it wasn't easy. It was hard hunting the whole time, and our sheep population is in the dumper.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Coke, if you were, say you were a one-man board of game, or you had the whole control of the state of the sheep, what do you see would actually fix it? And then, I guess, realistically, what do you think is going to happen? Is the board of game going to take a drastic measure and do something, or are we just going to proceed as normal?
I think the board of game is trying to do some stuff. I think they're out of their lane. I think they're in violation of the Constitution, the way I understand it, as far as board-generated proposals and all that goes, like they want to do out. And you guys are kind of close to 19. You guys have hunted sheep, I'm sure, by now. You've lived up here long enough.
Oh, yeah.
You've been sheep hunting a couple times?
Yep.
Okay, well, you know that 19's pretty close to you for a sheep unit.
Oh, we've hunted it, yes.
Might be one that you buy.
Yep.
Okay. Well, they're talking about closing it down, you know, for non-residents.
Yep. Are they actually going to go through with that? 19 in the Wood River, 20 kind of get wrapped in together as, you know, super high pressure areas, a lot of non-resident take and stuff like that. Are they actually going to go through with that or limit it, or what do you think they're going to do?
I think in 19 they're going to at least try. I don't think it's the answer. I don't think that the human harvest is significant, and that what past studies prove. So I don't think that that's a good proposal. I think everyone, if you want to shoot a doll sheep, bring me 3 golden eagles. How's that? That's what I think it should be.
Yeah, but they're doing a lot of the damage to the lambs, you know, in the springtime and stuff when they're born.
But people don't want to hear about, you know, people don't want to make tough decisions, and especially that one. It used to be totally acceptable in the old days. It used to be done a lot. As a matter of fact, I got a picture on my smartphone. You guys have been here long enough. You're familiar with the John Sturgeon case a little bit, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
You know that his family went through 11 years of hell. He went to the Supreme Court twice. He won both times, and we're still not enjoying the fruits of that victory. We're back to, until we bring these 3-letter government agencies in line and make them heal up along with these politicians, I don't see us getting shit done, and we're going to talk about it and maybe study it and talk about it. But drastic times call for drastic measures. We stand around with our thumbs in our ass for 2 years, and that's 2 years too long. 2 years we'll never get back. And that's what I see happening. You know, I've participated in the Board of Game process for 30 years. I took a 2-year hiatus under protests when they did the buffer zone, and I believe in our system, but I don't think it's as well oiled as it should be and could be, and I don't think it's servicing the people. I think that we are more or less doing ballot box biology. You know, people don't want to make tough decisions, and asking to shoot an eagle in this day and age is, you know, like asking to shoot a militant Muslim transvestite, even though the world would be better. Our fairy tale world we live in, people don't want to do it.
How did they used to take, did they shoot the eagles off the ground, or how would they hunt those back in the day when it wasn't as regulated and, like you said,
they
guys
shoot them right
care?
Out of the air. They shoot them right out of the air quite often.
With a,
you know, they're big
with a cub guys. Or what?
With the rifle.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, there's a book by, you know who Jim Reardon is, a famous Alaska author. You've probably read some of his books.
Lots of them, yep.
There's one about the guide over in Paxson, Slim something. I can't think of his last name. But he talks about shooting eagles. He go up in the Lambing Cliffs, he's shooting them out of the air with a 30-06.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I could pull it off if it was legal. Only if it was legal, because I do believe in the rule of law. I want to make that abundantly clear. But I started to say, I have a picture in my smart-ass phone from John Sturgeon fundraiser in the summer of 2018, and it shows two old Alaska gentlemen who are no longer with us, Congressman Don Young and Master Guide Urban Rahoy, who've both passed in the past few years, and they sat there and talked for an hour and a half about predator control and how to really take care of predators, and they talked about poisoning animals and everything. I mean, well, it should be a no holds barred when you're in a crisis situation like this, in my opinion. Now, I know that offends some people. But again, I don't care, because one thing I've been very lucky in my life is I've been exposed to a lot of old hunting guides besides my, you know, the usual suspects, my parents, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles. My mentors, besides my immediate family, has mostly been hunting guides and some pretty great old sheep hunters like Bill Wagaman and John Swiss and Urban Rahoy and the Branham brothers. And I spent a lot of time in their company and listened to what they talked about and how they used to do things. And, you know, I soaked up a lot of knowledge, and it's knowledge that I'm not afraid to share with anyone. And if it offends you, well, too bad. Get thicker skin, because the truth can be painful sometimes.
Yeah, they handle a lot of the predators. You're in Healy, they're close to the park, and I know they don't have a biologist, like you said. But can you reference your hunting areas versus the park sheep population? And is it, I mean, obviously they're not hunted in the park, but are they still in bad shape as well due to predators and weather?
Yeah, they're in real bad shape, man. I was just telling my son last year, and Trevor's been here to my place a multitude of times. I used to could sit here in my front yard with a spotting scope and or binos and look at, along the front range, be looking at anywhere from maybe 5 or 6 dozen to a few hundred sheep and maybe 8, 9, 10, 12 different groups. And the last few years, you look across that front range, you're lucky if you can find a couple dozen sheep in total. It's bad.
Yeah.
Well, I figured that my area where I hunt was off 70%. And according to the fish and game statistics that they provided to our advisory committee back in November, that I'm about right, because the normal harvest for 20A is 112 to 120 sheep, and this year it was only like 34.
Yeah. So do you think they're going to put a restriction on it? Do you think they'll make it a draw? Will they shut down 19 and 20A altogether? I'm with you. I think something, everyone gets heated about sheep. It's a really special resource and awesome that we have them. But I agree that something drastic needs to be done. I don't really know what that is. And also, I don't know what's really going to be done about it, realistically.
Well, I think in the future you will see it restricted some. It's going to have to be, obviously. And I think you'll see to where even like goes on down in the States where residents are going to have to start paying for tags.
And I'm fine with that, to bring in more revenue and stuff like that.
Yeah. Right.
Because that's the...
It's a precious resource. You said it. It's a precious resource. It's a cool resource. And if you've been here and been lucky enough to hunt them for free forever like I have been, good on you. But I think it's time that we start paying the piper. And I mean, I'm willing to pay. I never even punch a sheep tag, but I would buy one to stab it in my pocket just in the unlikely event I'm in the field without a client and there's one right in front of me. I'd hate to not have a tag.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think the Board of Game will restrict non-residents, or will they restrict everyone? A lot of times they just restrict everyone. Like for our brown bear hunt down here in Nye, it's a pretty heated subject too, because it's a trophy animal like a sheep, and they restricted everyone on an equal basis. Do you think they'll stick with that mentality if they do end up putting a restriction on a season or closing something altogether?
Yeah, I think they will. I think we'll all share the burden.
Yeah, and I'm fine with the burden even going to, you know, maybe not one every 4 years, but every other year. You don't need, if you've killed 10 sheep or whatever like that, you can afford to go a few years before you shoot another. Because
Right.
Sheep need a break.
Well, and by and large, most of the guiding industry, not all of us, but by and large, most of us have been pretty self-regulating. Like I could have booked 10 more sheep hunts that I didn't book the last couple of years at the show, but I don't want to take guys on armed trail rides.
Yep.
And I still have a few that I'm doing, like this hunt coming up, and I have a few that have carried over from the Wuhan Fauci scandemic, and but I'm not looking forward to it, man. It's scary thinking about it. I mean, I don't like to take a guy out and not have him have a really, really good chance of seeing maybe even. It's nice to have choices when you're hunting and not like find that one ram that barely is legal on day eight and you're going, fuck, should we even shoot this guy or what? And then, you know, that's just, it's not fun. It's not fun for the guide. It's surely not fun for the client, you know, and stressful. That's what a lot of guys who I didn't take their money at the show, they're like, oh, yeah, I know, I'm a hunter. I say, yeah, you say that now, but on day nine of a 10-day hunt, when I haven't shown you one legal ram, we all know who the biggest asshole in Alaska is going to be, and it ain't going to be you.
Yeah,
I understand. So, yeah, it's tough.
I mean, I hope we do something drastic, but I don't know. I don't think that we have the government under control enough to make them do the will of the people yet. That's my opinion. It's sad. I'm going to keep participating because I vote and I participate, so therefore I'll bitch, but I don't see us fixing it.
Well, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. You can't have a bitch and then not be in the Board of Game process and different things like that. You know, you gotta be an active member instead of just, you know, writing on Facebook and complaining, because that's not going to change anything like that. Not saying anything you will say to Board of Game necessarily will make a difference, but I mean, it is a cool process that we have, unlike a lot of other states, that we have a voice to, you know, comment and write proposals and send our comments in and even give a testimony in person that I've done on a few different issues, you know. So it's definitely worth something that I think people should participate in, and a lot of people don't get their voice heard.
Right. Well, and we're all in this together, you know, and we should all strive for everyone to have an opportunity to go out there and have a good time and have an opportunity to harvest an animal that you want, be it a, I don't give a shit if it's a caribou or a muskox or a sheep or whatever it is. We have the ability to grow as many of them as we want to. We just got to do it, you know, and quit coddling the predators and stuff. There's too many of them. And you know, too bad, so sad. Someone's got to pay. And the only thing we can do is beat the shit out of the predators. That's all we can do. And, you know, like I said before, the guides have been pretty good about being self-regulating. I don't know if you guys were around when the whole Dall Sheep Working Group thing went on a few years ago for a few years.
I think we showed up kind of right after that, but after that closed and kind of finalized.
Okay. Well, I participated in that too. And the guides were, you mentioned something earlier about one every 4 years. The guides, myself and Frank Ensminger, were very instrumental in putting that one every 4 years out there as kind of an olive branch, if you will, to the resident hunters of Alaska, you know, to meet us part way. Because I personally am very affected by that one every 4 year rule. I got guys who'll come with me every year or two. Not anymore, they won't, but they used to.
Yeah, they used to. So the big issue with 19C that Rack was seeing, though, is a lot of, when you look at the stats, I think it was like, I don't know, 60, 80, 90% of the sheep were shot by non-residents. So if you have a dwindling sheep herd, do you think the non-residents should be restricted first? And I know you're biased because that's your income.
Well, I think by the Constitution, they are... I think by our state constitution, they are the first ones, out of the equation, which is fine. Hey, man, if we follow the constitution in its entirety, I'll be happy. Both of them, both the state and the federal constitution, they're pretty good documents, and they're pretty foolproof and idiot resistant. I mean, you can even have fools and idiots in there, and they can't totally fuck it up as proof of what's going on right now. So,
oh, man, yeah. I agree, and I'm glad you said that.
If we just follow the Constitution, I mean, our state constitution is all about game management and sustainable yield harvest, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. If we just follow those easy-to-read documents in plain English, we can fix this real easy, and there's nothing wrong with shooting a few eagles.
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna win that battle, but yeah. What are the wolves, what's your take on the wolves and the sheep predation? Do they get up in where the sheep are wintering, or is it more of a springtime thing, or how do they affect them?
Yeah, they get their fair share of sheep. I don't think there's as many sheep for them to target right now, so they're probably not counting on them, but surely, especially last winter when we had that bad icing deal, you know, you think about it, any animal out there gets hurt, they fall and hurt themselves on the ice, ain't no vet coming along, you know that. There's wolves and coyotes, and that's about it. Eagles. Yep.
So yeah, and they will finish
the
job.
The sheep definitely pay a price in these weather phenomena, so, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't like it. I'm going to keep participating, but I'm a little disturbed and bummed out that I don't think my son's going to have the opportunities that I had. And he's kind of followed in my footsteps in this guiding thing. He's been guiding for 8 years now. You know, that's what he's chosen to do. So, it's going to take a lot of fixing to make things right.
Yeah, he must be a tough kid. I think I saw a picture online of him. He was hunting sheep and extra tufts. And I said, that's a tough son of a bitch.
Right.
Yeah. I can't imagine doing that where the sheep live.
Yow.
But anyways, another question on wolves. You also trap in your area, too, to help the predator population?
Yep.
Talk to us a little bit about trapping.
A lot of winter trap line What's that?
I said, talk to us a little bit about your trapping. Do you do, I think you do predator hunts. We just glanced at your website. Do you do trap line tours, or what are you offering for your business in the wintertime?
Yeah, I got three different trap lines that I run, one right out of my house. And that's the one where I'm surrounded by the park, where you might catch a park wolf and get famous if it's wearing Park Circus bling, that is. And
oh man.
And then yeah. Well, you know, the sad thing is they used to be okay with it, but over the years they've gotten, the park's gotten a little weird about it. You know, I used to turn those callers in originally to Lane Adams and then to Tom Meyer, and you know, you share information with biologists. That's what hunters and trappers and biologists do, share information. And then they got real, it just got real squirrely. Tom got real aloof, and I know his overlords were telling him, you know, quit giving that guy the time of day. He's a scourge, because they don't like you. They don't like us trapping their wolves, as they see it.
And, well, and that's their wolves, about, that's what they call them, their wolves?
Yeah. Yeah, some of the old park overlords. Yeah, they think of them as their wolves. And they actually, you guys know, belong to all of us. So it's your wolf when you're getting your Polaroid taken with it. Until that time, it belongs to all of us.
Well, it's just weird that your snares can't discriminate against a collared wolf versus a non-collared wolf. You should try running a better trap.
Yeah, if they wouldn't put those collars on them, they wouldn't last as long in a snare set either.
I know. But, so we just, yeah, Googled you. Can you tell everyone the story of that real quick about the horse and everything that kind of got you famous?
Well, there's been a whole bunch of them. Originally, I probably like the third collared wolf that I trapped. Just as I got to the site, I heard a 185 off in the distance. And if you guys have been in Alaska bush enough, you know, I can tell the difference between a Super Cub or a 185 or a de Havilland Beaver or a Helio Courier just by the sound long before I see the aircraft.
Yep.
And I had caught this collared bitch wolf, and I hear the 185, and at that time there was a guy who was they call him a biologist. I reference him as a biostitute. He worked for Friends of Animals named Gordon Haber. And I knew it was him because I could tell the sound of the airplane. So I fortunately had a guy with me, and one of my guides was with me, and I said, because this was like the third or fourth one I had caught since I'd moved to Denali, and I said, oh, fuck, man, I know this is going to cost me a ton of grief because Gordon's going to be here any minute. So that's when I did my original T-shirt that I took. I took the wolf and I put my arm around her and put a pistol in her mouth and had my guy take a picture of it, and I put it on a T-shirt because they were always threatening to boycott our tourism business. We did trail rides forever. My wife had her trail ride business, and they were always threatening to boycott tourism. That was their big thing. And so that was my original T-shirt. It's got a picture of a wolf it looks like a terrorist. That's me, and a gun in his mouth. And the verbiage is, visit Alaska this summer or the wolf gets it.
Coke, how do I buy a shirt? Please tell me I can buy a shirt.
Yeah, how can we?
Yeah, I get you a shirt. I still make lots of T-shirts.
Oh,
yeah.
I want to buy one. I want to buy a couple. But sorry to interrupt. I just want to make sure I get a shirt. That's great. So does the guy?
Well, you guys. So anyhow, that's where I really got cross-threaded with Gordon Haber and the animal rights people. But you know, another thing, I have always, and I've said this on many occasions, I've been accused of doing some pretty nasty shit that I've never done. I've never treated a government game caller, be it Alaska Department of Fish and Game caller or a federal Park Service caller, with anything but the respect and dignity a scientific instrument is due. I don't think the Park Circus is doing any science worth of shit, but I still don't condone, you know, damaging their equipment. And I turn it in, and I try and have a relationship with the biologist. I don't anymore, but I did at one time. I don't anymore by their choosing, not by mine. So they're lost, not mine. But I will say this, you know, they've violated my family's civil rights and civil liberties over the years by sharing my name and information with groups who threaten harm and stuff to myself and my family for my legal wolf hunting and trapping. And so therefore, I got a real problem with whoever it is at the park that's leaking my name and information out to the enemy. That's completely out of line, because a government employee works for all of us, and so they should never work against us.
I agree. Isn't that scary when all those Democrats going to leave mom's basement and come get you and find you and kill you?
No.
There was a
lot of times in our house, and my wife is way scarier than I am. She makes me look like Bernie Sanders, and she can shoot. But when you're raising a little kid and people are calling up and saying horrible, viscerally vulgar shit about killing you and your kid, and at the time, my wife still's never killed a wolf. She don't give a shit about killing a wolf one way or the other. She doesn't care if we do it, but it's not high on her priority list. She's more of like a Nordstrom's girl.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just the way that those people act. And again, it is about politics. And it is really simple. It's right and wrong, right and left, and that's all there is to it. And I'm very unbending in that. And I've had some ugly, rotten conversations with my wife about my wolf hunting and trapping. You know, do you have to do it right out our front door? Because this is the ones that cause me the most problems, the ones right out my front door. But like I told her, that's why we moved here, was for the sheep hunting and the wolf hunting. Why would I stop?
Kill them all.
That's why we came here.
You know, and a lot of people think you're just heartless, you know? And I'm sure you have a deep respect for wolves like we do. They're one of the smartest, hardest animals. I think, plain and simple, hardest animal to trap. You compare that to a wolverine, I mean, wolverine are stupid. They'll stick their face in the 330. Oh. You're never going to catch a wolf doing that. They're so freaking smart and frustrating. And so when you finally do have it all come together, you know, you're proud.
Right. Well, and the thing that people that don't do it don't understand is, if you got any kind of morals at all, man, I shed a tear for every animal that I take, whether it's a 16-ounce pine marten or a 1,600-pound moose. Same for the wolves and stuff. You know, they don't understand that. They think you shoot it, so you must hate it. No, I love sheep. I love Sitka deer. I love mountain goats. I don't love moose so much because they're too heavy, but, you know, I love animals. And I do shed a tear for every animal I take. You know, you've taken an animal's life, be it for food or for fur or whatever. It's a serious endeavor. Mm-hmm. You should take it serious.
Yeah, I agree. Can you finish a little bit on the story of the biologist? Did he fly over in the 185 and then land on you guys, or what happened?
Well, no, he flew over and circled us and circled us and circled us. Actually, I snapped the photo while he circled us. Then he followed us home for quite a ways. And then of course he made a big, big damn deal about it. And, that was, you know, I can't remember how many of those frickin' collared wolves there's been, but there's been about 7 or 8 of them that have caused me severe grief. The very last one was probably been at least a decade ago now, I bet it was, or close to it. And we keep old horses around that we probably shouldn't, because when they get old and you can't use them anymore, it costs about 3 times as much to feed them as it does. You know, you could keep 3 young, healthy horses alive, but after they've given you a couple of decades of good service packing moose out of the swamps and carting your ass across deep rivers, it's kind of hard to take them out behind the willow patch and shoot them in the head. So we keep them around a lot longer than we should. And when an old horse gets old like that, you're really pouring the food to them. We're feeding them like oatmeal every day. We make like a equine senior and beet pulp porridge, if you will, you know, like a runny oatmeal.
Yeah.
And serve it to them warm and stuff. And I went out to get this to feed this old horse, and I'd had him forever, man. He's a great old horse named Hobo. And I went out to feed him, and he was down on the ground and in trouble, obviously distressed. It was cold as could be out, and 30 some below. And he wasn't getting up, and I knew it was the end for him. So I put him down, and then I hauled him out and put snares all around him. And that was, I believe that was the last wolf with a collar on that I caught that caused me all kinds of grief for a little while. But it did sell t-shirts, so it's not all bad. And like you said, most of those keyboard warriors, they're not coming to your house anyhow. You know,
they're too busy in mom's basement eating hot pockets. That's what I tell people.
Right. Yeah, they're not leaving their mom's basement. I'm not worried about it. But you know, like I said, over the years, there was times when it was some pretty ugly. You know, my wife answers the phone probably 90 sometimes out of 100 when you call the house, so she was taking the majority of the shit. And at the time, you know, she's a 30-year-old lady trying to raise a kid. She doesn't want to listen to that bullshit.
No.
But like I told her, she's more dangerous than I am. You got a hell of a lot more to fear from my wife than you do from me. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, definitely. So in the winter, are you guys doing, for your outfitting business, are you doing guided wolf hunts, trap line tours? What do you guys offer in the winter time to keep busy?
Yep, that's what I do. I do hunts all winter long for wolves and coyotes and wolverine and lynx cats and fox. And I run three different trap lines, one here out of my house, one I trailer about 30 miles south of here, and then another one I trailer about 50 miles south of here and leave out of the little community of Cantwell and go out to Denali Highway about 70 miles to a friend's cabin.
Wow. You run all three of those lines at the same time?
Yep.
That's a lot of work. Keeps you busy.
Yep, keeps me out of trouble unless I catch the wrong wolf.
Yeah, and then are you guys, is it mostly trapping? Are you predator calling or running wolf tracks on snow machine?
No, we do a lot of predator calling, and I'll usually set up a bait out at, near my hunting camp. So I really want to beat them up near my hunting camps. Killing them right here around my home is okay, but I don't hunt out here. Mostly it helps the locals that hunt out here. And the locals that are smart appreciate it. So I really like to concentrate in my hunting area. And we do some bait sets and whatnot, too. We have a good idea of where we can pinch them off. And you know, sitting in a snowbank at 20 below all day gets old fast. We like to set up a nice tent with a stove inside of it and a big bait out front. And you can sit there and be comfortable and wait for them to show up.
Okay.
That's always nice.
Yeah, we have friends in Canada do that quite a bit. It's their preferred method.
Yeah, we do call some. You do spot and stalk them rarely, but like you said, you know, they're smart as shit, man. I've shot dozens of wolves in my life, and I guarantee you I haven't shot more than less than a handful quartering to me or quartering away. Most of them, I've given it to them right up the liberal lobe. They're going far, far away as fast as they can.
The liberal lobe. I've never heard that. I love that. Yeah, that's crazy.
What's your usual winter harvest for wolves? I mean, trapping, hunting.
Yeah, like total count.
On a good year, we'll do 12 to 15.
Good.
5 to 8, typically.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Are you guys trapping them out there too?
Yeah. Yeah, we targeted a whole pack this winter because they were in this drainage and all the moose were disappearing, and we used to find a lot of sheds in there and we hunt it, and then they started disappearing. So we found this wolf pack of about 8, went put snares all around and got them all. So now the moose are
right
back.
On.
But yeah, we're at like over 10 so far, getting the trap line going, but our weather's been pretty crummy the last few weeks, so we kind of pulled all of our snares because they were just getting iced and blown in with snow, and so kind of got to wait till we can do it because we did a little bit via airplane trapping.
It's a pain in the ass, man. You're using a cub, so you want to make $1 million. Everyone's like, start with 2 or 3 million, and that's kind of the method.
Right.
I had a guy tell us on, I know you're not on social media the other day, so, oh man, if I had an airplane trapping wolves is easy. And I just want to be like, you dumbass, there is nothing about wolf trapping that's easy, you know, and I'm out there picking up freaking ice, landing in the dark on skis, looking at flat light. I'm just like, man, I sure wish I had a freaking snow machine right now. It'd be really nice. You know, it's rainy and misty. I just run out there and check my traps, but can't do that with a cub because you're going to freaking die.
Right.
So weather's been killing us, keeping us down. But yeah, we got that whole pack, and I know you see it. As soon as you kill those wolves, those moose are just like elated. They're just almost smiling when you go by. They're just back in there. They're happy. They're calm, and they move right back into where the food is. But we would always see these wolves in this drainage because, like you, we hunt the area, and they would go in there right post rut, October, November, and they would just hammer the moose, and we'd always see them within like the same 5 mile stretch of river. So finally went down there and took a caribou carcass I had shot, you know, tied it to the wing strut and packed it in there, and hooked a couple that were close, but a lot of them, you know, we tried to set far away, 100, 150 yards, and got them coming and going up and down the riverbank. And I think we ended up getting all of them.
So are you guiding out there also?
No, I'm not. Everyone thinks I should be a guide. I got into sport fish guiding out here, and that's kind of how I got into Bristol Bay. I started coming up here when I was 17, working on Nooshigak guiding, and then kind of all over Western Alaska and stuff, and worked in Southeast, somewhere around Anchorage. I just really like pulling the trigger. I know I'd be a really good guide. I'd worry about it kind of taking the passion away from me like it did for fishing and stuff. So right now I pretty much just take wife and kids and close friends and family. So I'm pretty much just an outfitter. I just do it for free. So kind of a dumbass.
Super smart.
Kind of a dumbass when you think about it. But, you know, I enjoy life and get to hunt a lot. And we, you know, King Salmon, there's not a lot here, but it's remote enough, and there's not a lot of people, and we don't really like people. So it makes it nice for us. When you got an airplane, you can get out and experience a lot. And that's
right.
That's why I moved to Alaska.
Right.
So we really like
that. Do you guys go to the Wild Sheep Show?
I don't do a lot of shows.
Show in Anchorage.
Never been. Right. When's that one?
It's going to be in March or April. If you show up, I'll bring you a t-shirt. How's that?
Oh, man. That's a hard pull.
That's a, you know, it's only an $800 cub ride. That's an expensive t-shirt.
Yeah, 1024 gallon for Avgas out here. You know, it stings a little bit. You try not to look, but you got to pay to play. I got a bunch of traps I'm hopefully setting tomorrow for Wolverine. I've been late, but I don't know. With an airplane, it's just easier for me to just go and hit it really hard for a month or two rather than, you know, put gear out in November and try and check it and keep it working and stuff. So hopefully I'm going to get all my traps out tomorrow and catch some fur. We got quite a few Wolverine in our country. Not many cats, a couple Martin, and it's pretty much Wolverine and wolves. That's about it. And they're all looking to catch the moose and stuff. That's kind of what we're thinking.
Well, tell us a little bit about your sheep hunt coming up this year and the raffle that you guys are doing.
Yeah, it's 10-day sheep hunt. You want to chime in, Trevor? Have you been here the whole time? I hope I haven't heard you.
Yeah, no, I've been in here just enjoying everything. So yeah, I'll chime in. This is Trevor. So, yeah, thanks for that. So Elite Hunt Club is what I'm about. I'm down in the lower 48, just helping to make someone's dream of shooting a doll sheep hunt come true. But, so yeah, this fall, we've got a sheep hunt here with Coke. We're giving away, we're doing a raffle. It's a little bit different than some of the other raffles that people may be familiar with, in that we're limiting the that we're doing. So that way you have an idea of what your odds are. So we're starting at $25 for one entry, and you can just go up from there and do the math. We know Adam's not a numbers guy, but from you pay $200 and you get 10 entries, and that gets you a 1 in 250 odds of winning. So if you got a few hundred bucks to spare, then we're having people enter, and then once we hit that 2500 entry limit, we'll stop it, we'll do the drawing and send someone up with Coke and Midnight Sun Safari. So that's kind of what I'm about, is trying to get this going, letting guys know that they can put in, know their odds, and be just transparent with what it would take to spend a little bit to go win a sheep hunt.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's kind of funny. Adam went to a show last year, and you know how they have the big barrels, and you do the raffle tickets, and it's just like, I have no chance of ever winning this. Adam somehow got up on stage. It was like they picked.
It was the sheep camp at the only show I've ever been to.
The expo.
Expo. And
I was there actually. Yeah, I remember you going up there. And
well, see, I thought it was
so funny.
I thought you got to pick any sheep, and it was for a doll sheep. And if I would have won it, I just would have donated it to the next guy or like a Wounded Warriors thing. Because, like, I mean, not to like brag, but yeah. I'm a guy that lives in Alaska. I own a super cub. Like, I'm not gonna take a guided sheep hunt. I've already killed a few of them, and I'd like to just donate it back. But then it was heads and tails. I've always been a heads guy, and everyone's like, tails never fails, and I'm just like, dude. You know, I didn't even know that. I was gonna pick stone if I won. I'm like, I'm going for a stone hunt, and I didn't even know how it worked or whatever. But I sure got a lot of criticism from my wife and my table about Monday morning quarterback, hands on your ass versus your head or whatever. But it was cool. I was out the first flip, but it was cool to see just how stressful that was for guys trying to win a sheep hunt. So similar to what you guys are doing.
Yeah, and that's kind of where this thought came up, because I was sitting there too, and I'm like, first of all, you got to stand in line, you got to sit in this meeting and be around all these people, and you don't even know what your odds are. Like, hey, let's do something that you don't have to be present to win, enter, and then we'll draw and give you some good odds. So that's where I was sitting in there thinking, hey, we got to do this better. Like, this is how we've been doing it the last 30 years. I think it's time to change it up a little bit. Let's see how this works.
Yeah, I like that. So how do you buy tickets? Is there a certain website, or what's the easiest way to
do it? We can post it on the podcast description.
Yeah,
if you
want to post it. So it's elitehuntclub.com. So we've just got a website on there that you can select number of tickets you want. So elitehuntclub.com. We've got some social media stuff you can follow too. We've even got if you want to use Stuck in the Rut 15 as a discount code, so we've got that going for your listeners. So Stuck, and then the letter N, Stuck in the Rut 15, will give you a little discount off of the entries for listening to this. So.
And then you said it's $25 bucks per entry, and there's 2,500 entries total.
Yeah, total.
Okay.
Yep.
And it's like a normal raffle where you pay. If I want to spend more money, I'll get, you know, a couple tickets free, right? You said earlier, I think before we went live, like $500 gets you how many entries?
Yeah, so $500 would get you 30 entries.
Okay, gotcha.
So yeah, or $200 will get you 10 entries. So yeah, the more you buy, it starts to break it down a little bit. But yeah, if you spend that $500,
yeah,
you get 30 entries, then you've got
1 in 83.
Yeah.
I mean, that's better than I drew a bighorn tag this year in Idaho, and that's way better odds than that. So you're saying there's a chance.
So that's where I'm like, hey, and we've got guys that are like every week or so, they must have found some more money under their mattress or something, but they keep buying like 10 tickets, and there's some guys that are up over 50 entries because they're like, hey, I'm seeing this is like legit and we can see my odds. Like, I've got a pretty good standing chance. So,
well, they're probably like me. They're going out to their back shed and they're pulling the dick bones out of a wolf because their wife says you need to make money and they're selling those. I didn't know you could sell those, Coke, but you know, one decent thing, there's not a lot, but there's a couple decent things about social media. And I was selling those wolf dick bones for like $100 a piece, and people were eating that stuff up. No pun intended, but they were buying those things left and right. And so I was going back out there and tell my wife, I got to go out and cut some more dicks off the wolves, but I got a whole body of frozen carcasses in the back shed. So, you know,
it's not t-shirts, but
campaign with Koala.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually saving the wolf carcasses. A couple of my buddies in Canada said you could take those, you know, to a new area, trap a whole pack, go 50-100 miles, and drop those in a bait pile and some really thick brush, and other wolves and, you know, fox will come in there, and you might be able to hook a couple other wolves off those carcasses. Have you ever tried that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, also for wolverine, they really like wolf meat for some reason. So wolf is real good for catching wolverines if you haven't tried that yet.
I never have. I just know everything loves they to like, eat a beaver, so I usually just stick a piece of beaver in a bucket, and I usually just run all bucket sets. You know, it's pretty good for airplane trapping, and it's windproof.
Oh, yeah.
Gets them off the ground, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have very much time, and so when I go, it's got to be pretty efficient. You know, I have everything, all the springs and everything compressed, and I got the buckets out there still, and I just show up, throw a piece of beaver in there, throw a trap in there, and as much gusto as I can fit on a branch, pretty much, because I might not be back for 2-3 weeks if the weather sucks, or at least landing there to rebait it or anything like that, and I can fly right by, and if you got a wolverine hanging in the trap, it's time to land. So never thought of a wolf carcass, but yeah, it's definitely not fun bringing in frozen green belly wolves and letting them thaw in your fur shed, which is my downstairs basement of my house, and having your wife bitch about it. But do what you got to do for $100 these days, right? Times are hard. Yeah, right. Yummy is right.
Yummy.
It's gross.
Well, do you have anything to add, Coke, to what Trevor said with the sheep?
Hey, you guys and girls, it's mostly their 10-day cabin based. Horseback hunts, you know, sheep hunting, we do typically wind up spiking out for a couple days here, a couple days there. If you're lucky, you'll shoot one right out of camp. We have on many occasions, but typically, especially with the way the population is right now, you're probably going to ride 100 or 150 miles and hike another 10 or 15 or 20 before you find one. That would be my guess. You know, I've always told people for years, typically it's 5 to 7 hours of pretty arduous uphill climbing from the time you lead the horse to the time you pull the trigger. Can be a whole lot less, but it can be a whole lot more too. So I don't know exactly how it's going to transpire, but we'll give it our best. And I got a bunch of good young guides. I've trained them all myself, and they know the country real well, and we got good horses, we got good area. Our sheep are just depleted at the moment, so we're just going to have to hunt our butts off, that's all.
Coke, are you guys riding into camp, or do you guys fly them in and then have your stock there?
Yeah, we fly in from the little airport in Healy. We fly in to camp from there.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, if you're a Super Cub operator, you wouldn't like this part of the world. It's not friendly to small airplanes. I've had Cub pilots and stuff in the past, but like I got a really good friend who's a real good Cub jockey and a hunter, trapper, guide guy, and he says flying a Super Cub around the Central Alaska Range is quite often like trying to keep a potato chip aloft in high winds. It's pretty wicked.
What are they flying? Is it 185s, or what do you guys charter to fly in there?
Yeah, I'm using a 185 primarily. That does most of my flying. I've used bigger planes also, but primarily 185. And like my buddy Tim that I was just referencing, he prefers his Scout over a Cub. Just that extra weight makes that much difference.
Yeah, when you're looking out the window and you're looking at the whole wing bending, you know, I've had that on pretty much every airplane, Beavers, Cubs, and when it's turbulent, those Cubs are so light, they just get thrown around upside down, and you're just trying to hang on, you know?
Right. Bingo.
Yeah, fun.
Do you guide other species? Like, do you do caribou or anything like that, or primarily sheep?
Yeah, the caribou is the only animal in my area that's not over the counter. You got to draw the tag. It's a coveted tag. We shoot nice caribou if you can draw it. Everything else is over the counter. You don't need a tag for wolves, but grizzlies over the counter, moose is over the counter. We got a really good moose population. I think Adam mentioned it earlier. Unit 20A is kind of the breadbasket of Alaska. You walk into 10 fish and game offices saying you want to go sheep hunting, I bet you 8 of them are going to send you to 20A. Same with moose hunting. The moose population is really good and stable. It's actually just gotten down to the bottom end of where they want it. They want it between 11 and 14,000 animals. I'd say that's what the unit can sustain. And we've had as many as 22,000 since I've been here. And it typically is around 14 to 15,000, but they think they got it down to about 11, which is, they want it in the 11 to 14 range. They say that's the best for the, what the habitat will provide for.
Well, okay.
So,
how are the bears, like the grizzly bears you guys have? Are they hitting the calves pretty hard in the spring?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And you guys can hunt them down in the willows and stuff? Yeah, they're, those big boars get really good at it, even some older sows. So are you guys trying to hunt near the calving grounds and the moose are going to drop calves in that time frame in May?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what we do.
Yeah, we're going to roll some bears this spring out west because we are trying to help out the moose as much as we can, and they can wreck a moose population pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite? Do you like sheep the most? I mean, I know you love packing moose. I try and land as close as I can. Tana, bless her heart, she is a killer, but sometimes she goes into I don't think mode, and so I'll get an in-reach message from her. Hey, we just shot a moose over here. She went with one of her friends this year, and I dropped him off, and she actually had to shoot a moose in self-defense. It was a little 40-inch bull that just kind of kept coming at her, and she kept trying to circle and get around. It kind of pinned her to a creek, and so she shot it with her 454 and, you know, could have called the troopers, and it was on fed lands, and, you know, getting the feds involved and troopers a helicopter. I said, it'd be a lot easier if you just tagged the thing, so she tagged it. But now they got a carcass down there, and it's on a river, and they want to move and stuff because they didn't want to deal with any bears, and Tana's just kind of unlucky sometimes when it comes to the wilderness. And then her friend ends up shooting a 71-inch moose, first time ever stepping foot into Alaska. So pretty lucky. She actually got on the cover of Huntful, if you saw that. That was Tana's friend Alicia up here. Super nice gal. But Tana dropped me a pin where they shot him. Like, what the hell are you doing over there? And she's like, well, you can probably land somewhere over here. And I'm like, usually I fly around and say, okay, I can land here. And if you shoot one over here, you can kind of hunt a mile from here because that's kind of the base, you know, a mile, unless you can get horses close. And they were like 2.4 miles direct from where I dropped them off. And I was just gonna be like, I'm not landing. If I can't get in there, you guys can pack it yourself and I'll see you in a week. But
just
luckily,
horses.
Yeah, exactly. Horses in this soft country would not do that well, I don't think. He's snapping a lot of legs, but yeah, I was able to land pretty close. It was only a quarter mile or something like that. But sometimes Tana doesn't always think things through, and I keep telling her one day it's going to bite her in the ass.
I'll just pack it out.
Just pack it out.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Till I get older, then I'll be tired of packing moose quarters.
Do you like sheep the most, or what's your favorite species to guide?
Yeah, I like sheep the best, yep. I like to eat Sitka deer the best.
Yep.
But I like sheep hunting the best, and then wolf hunting, and then Sitka deer. And, yeah, I'm not overly enamored with the moose just because of what we were just discussing. They're not even fun to deal with when you can walk a horse right up in the middle of them. I've dealt with way too many moose in my life.
Yeah, but it's iconic. I mean, everyone wants a moose, you know? So are you just having your son guide those, or what do?
Everyone wants a moose. I lined up guiding moose hunts, you know, especially now I'm not taking near as many sheep hunters. So, you know, we're going to be doing moose hunts. I'm sad to say, but I got, you know, I still got lots of those to be hunted. So
yeah. What do you
got to do what you can do?
What's an average bull for your area? What size can guys expect?
Mid-50s. Okay. Mid-50s, 55, 58.
It's a good moose.
You know, and they got nice fronts. Yeah, they got nice fronts. Typically, you're going to have big fronts, 4 or 5 brow tines on each side. Nice tall canoe paddles with nice points up both sides.
Yeah, I like that look. Rather than one that's 65 and kind of weak fronts and spindly, I'd way rather have one that's 58 and good fronts.
Right, bingo. Yeah, that's what we got. They're good moose, and they're doing well. So, and we so far have had a fairly gentle winter. Been kind of cold, but it's not been real bad with snow. We probably got about 4 feet of snow right now.
Okay, nice. I was going to ask you too. You're talking about old timers back in the day. Did you ever have any chats with Ron Hayes? Did you know him?
I knew Ron. My buddy Jim Christie actually guided for him years ago.
Okay.
I didn't interact with him too much. I interacted with him some, actually, in the King Salmon Airport many, many years ago.
Okay.
It was my most interaction with Ron.
Yeah, that guy's got some great stories. He was one of the first guys I got linked up to work for up here, and he kind of showed me how to fly a beaver, and that was summer of 2010 in Western Alaska. We had some of the worst weather. That's when Ted Stevens died over here and stuff, and just many, many airplane crashes and fatalities all over the state. And yeah, that guy's a legend. He keeps saying he's going to write a book, and it's just not finished yet. But I hope he gets it finished, because that guy's got some great stories. And he's one of those guys, like you said, you want to just sit there and soak it all up, because that's how you really learn stuff, is from the guys that have been here around and wrecked it and rebuilt it and got plenty of stories to tell.
Right. Bingo. You haven't wrecked yours lately, I hope, have you? That's an expensive endeavor if you poke a little hole in those things.
I mean, poking a hole. We just got a hangar house built up here, and by built, I mean just dried in, because we ran out of money, because it's expensive to build in the bush. And funny story, my guy was up here, a friend helping me do the roof, and he was cutting a piece of trim, and I had to run and go grab a part. And the cub was in the hangar, because I finally have a cub, you know, in the hangar, and I want to park it in there. I'm so excited. And, you know, tin snips leave pretty sharp edges on trim pieces. And he went to turn and put a slice in the bottom of the wing. It was only like 3 inches, and he just looked like white as a ghost. Like, I was going to kill him when I came back with a wrench or something. I said, "What's wrong?" He's like, "I am so, so sorry." And he just, like, looked up my wing, and I was like, "Oh, check this out." I went and grabbed a piece of zip tape, which is like really fancy tape you use for taping like sheathing together and stuff that we had. I had a bunch left over, and I said, "Look at this." Just threw a patch right over, and I said, "Look, we're airworthy." And he said, "You gonna fix that?" And I'm like, "I mean, maybe this winter, or maybe after next hunting season. I don't know. We'll see, but it'll fly." So, yeah, not too many holes. Yeah, try to keep from wrecking. I tried to get all that dumb stuff out of the way in the first couple thousand hours, and you know, you don't. They're saying is, you know, you got an empty bag of skill and a full bag of luck, and you want to fill up that skill bag before that luck bag runs out. And if you don't, you're bending metal or you're dead. And should have probably been dead a few times, but I'm still here. So God hasn't wanted to punch my ticket yet.
Yep.
Well, keep making good decisions.
Yeah, like not going when it's going to be icing, and I know the plane's just going to fill up with ice, and I can't run my traps, but, you know, it is what it is. I got hopefully some good weather tomorrow, and I'll get a bunch of sets out and get a bunch of Wolverine.
Well, righto.
Thanks, Coke, for coming on and chatting with us. It's been awesome hearing your stories and getting to know you a little bit. Coke for president. I'll vote for you.
Yeah,
Coke, we'd love to send your business some way. All I'd ask is you mail me a t-shirt, but I can give you my address.
Yeah, I will. If you you have my phone, this phone number is good. Send me your mailing address and I'll send you a t-shirt.
Thank you, sir. So you got moose by the plenty, caribou. What are the draw odds on caribou for people that want to come up? We get asked all the freaking time about caribou. Everyone wants one, so.
Yeah, it's like, it's 8%. It's a coveted, it's one of the most coveted hunts in the state for caribou. It's DC-827, Delta Charlie 827.
Okay.
And it's a kick-ass caribou hunt if you can draw it.
That's not horrible odds, you know, when you compare to lower 48 elk and mule deer tags, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah, someone's got to win.
Yeah, and so you got caribou, good caribou, pretty good moose hunting, you got wolves in the winter, and sheep are in the shitter right now.
Yep, and I got grizzly bears.
Got a lot of those, don't you?
And yeah, yep, got a lot of grizzlies, and yeah.
You know,
as soon as I can get the government on board with this eagle season, I'll be selling those hunts too.
Yeah. Do you know JR, who he bought the Alaska Number 9 Trapping Company? He's up there, I think, kind of by you.
Yeah.
He had a bear break into his cabin. He said a sow and a couple cubs. I saw that. He had put that on social media.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it tore it up pretty good. So he said he's on the hunt for some grizzlies this spring, because they you know what they can do to a cabin. Just hammered it.
Yeah.
Got to piss you off.
Yow.
Okay, yeah, before we let you go, if you want to leave a phone number, we can put it on the description of the podcast. And Midnight Sun Safaris is Midnight Sun Safaris is your business name, right?
Yep. Yep. So send me your mailing address to this phone number. Text it to me, and I'll send you a shirt.
Okay.
What size?
2X.
Tell me what. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us, and Trevor for kind of setting this thing up. And Trevor, we'll link the ability for people to buy those tickets for the sheep hunt this fall in there. So that's a great opportunity for, like you said, a working man to jump in and get a chance and go with Coke.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good night.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Coke.
Hey, you guys take care. Nice chatting with you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, take care.
Bye. See you, Coke.
See you.
That's it for today, everyone. Thanks for joining us. If you like the podcast, please leave us a review and also reach out to us with any questions. Until next time.